na chai tana prabhani tana jaya chaita godana shiva sadhiva bhakta vena.
The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami Maharaj on October 2nd, 1980 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text 23.
O Mother Earth,
O Mother Earth,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Hari,
Hari,
incarnated Himself,
incarnated Himself,
as Lord Shri Krishna,
as Lord Shri Krishna,
just to unload your heavy burden, all His activities, here are transcendental, and they cement the path of liberation. You are now bereft
of His presence.
You are probably now thinking
of
those activities and feeling sorry in their absence. Purport. The activities of the Lord include liberation, but they are more relishable than the pleasure derived from nirvana or liberation. According to Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word used here is nirvana vilambitani, that which minimizes the value of liberation. To attain nirvana liberation, one has to undergo a severe type of tapasya, austerity. But the Lord is so merciful that He incarnates to diminish the burden of the earth. Simply by remembering such activities, one can defy the pleasure derived from nirvana and reach the transcendental abode of the Lord to associate with Him, eternally engage in His blissful, loving service. Thus end the purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Mother Earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, incarnated Himself as Lord Shri Krishna just to unload your heavy burden. All His activities here are transcendental and they cement the path of liberation. You are now bereft of His presence. You are now probably thinking of those activities and feeling sorry in their absence. The personality of religiosity is asking Mother Earth why she is lamenting. Now he is asking whether it is due to separation of the Lord. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai, what is the greatest suffering that anyone can suffer in this world? Ramananda Rai said, the suffering of a pure devotee for another pure devotee, separation of a pure devotee is the greatest suffering. That is the greatest, most intense separation. So, Mother Earth is actually a great devotee, Prithvi, and she was very fortunate to always have Lord Krishna, lotus foot dust on her body. Others were sometimes separated from Krishna, and sometimes they were united with Krishna. But the whole duration of Krishna's pastimes, Mother Earth was having His lotus feet touching her. So you can imagine the extensive separation she must have been feeling when Lord Krishna left. The devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it can hardly be described the situation that they were in once Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world. Knowing that when the Lord leaves, the intense separation one feels, Haridas Thakur, he requested Lord Chaitanya that he wanted to leave first. Therefore, on his request, that wonderful pastime of the disappearance of Haridas Thakur and his samadhi after bathing in the ocean and subsequent kirtans and feasts were celebrated. Haridas Thakur could understand that it would be a very difficult time to be present after the Lord had left. When Srinivas Acharya visited the devotees in Jagannath Puri, he was amazed to see that they were still living. For instance, Gadadhar Prabhu, who was deep in separation of the Lord, he could hardly sleep or eat. There was hardly any thing he could do except for a cry every time he thought of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Srinivas went to see Iswari, the great Vishnu Priya, the consort of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who from the age of 16 had to tolerate his separation and continued to stay on this earth even after he left. She had become so thin. Her body had become covered with dust. She wasn't taking care of her clothes. Her hair had become untidy. There was no difference to her between day and night. She was simply chanting the names of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She was simply engaged in offering him worship. Yet, to see her, those who were greatly fortunate enough, she was so effulgent, one could understand she was completely transcendentally situated. This is a very difficult thing for someone who is on the gross material platform to understand. But actually these great souls, their position in this intense worship of Lord Chaitanya or Lord Krishna becomes transcendental. Is transcendental, and they are not bound by the ordinary rules and regulations. This is a very much exceptional situation. At that point, they are no longer able to preach. They are simply engaged in the worship of the Lord. So, the personality of religiosity is asking Mother Earth that these may be, in other words, the symptoms that she's experiencing may actually just be symptoms of separation for the Lord. He would ask different things. Is it because of the irreligious kings? Is it because of the irreligious activities of the people? Why you are lamenting? Now he's asking, it must be because Krishna has left. It is natural that when the spiritual master or when the Supreme Personality of Godhead leave, that the disciple or the devotee will cry. It is natural that they will feel separation because there is a relationship of love. There's an intense relationship. So it's very natural that these things will happen. So the personality of religiosity is very expert, astute in understanding the different facets of religiosity, so he's inquiring finally if this may not be the symptoms that she is experiencing. And soon she will reveal her mind. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is especially blessed by Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, has instructed us that nirvana vilambitani means that which puts nirvana or liberation to shame, far transcends it. People are trying very hard to get out of the cycle of birth and death to get salvation. And as a result of that, some people succeed. But Vishwanath Chakravarti is saying that that success is insignificant compared to someone who gets pure devotional service for Krishna. Because simply by remembering the pastimes of Krishna, they are so powerful, they are so wonderful, that one transcends by far the pleasure of impersonal liberation. There's an example that if you take all the happiness that a human being can have, that a human being, the standard of perfect happiness of a human being, and if you give that to numeral one, and take that as a standard, on this earth, the maximum, of course, the Vedic intelligence is completely transparent. So of course different people may have different ideas what is maximum happiness. But actually the maximum happiness a person can have is the happiness of someone situated in the mode of goodness. Today their conception of happiness, contaminated by the modes of passion and ignorance, may give them a spurt of happiness, but then it throws them into anxiety, fear, lamentation, and misery. So that kind of happiness is not considered very significant. But if one takes that, whatever the maximum happiness that one can have on this planet, in one's life, is one, then from there we can start to begin to understand the relative happiness in this universe. And there's a scale that from here, if one goes to the Gandharva Loka, then his happiness increases and he becomes 10 times happier. If he goes to the, I forget the exact, there's the Chanara, Kinara, Siddha. Each time one goes, it goes up to 100, then 1,000, then 10,000, and 100,000. Finally, when one gets up to Indraloka, it's hundreds of thousands times more happiness than what one experiences here. And when one comes up to Brahmaloka, there again is thousands of times more happiness. And then it's compared that the happiness of nirvana, of liberation, compared to the happiness on Brahmaloka, the happiness of Brahmaloka is not even a drop compared to the ocean. That is how great the transcendental happiness of liberation is. And then it goes on and compares that, the liberation. If you compare that with the happiness experienced by a pure devotee appreciating the pastimes of Krishna, that whole ocean of liberation is just like the impression of water, the impression of a calf's hoof, that quantity of water, compared to the whole ocean, the transcendental bliss of Krishna's pastimes. So people on this earth are struggling for an insignificant quantity of happiness. When with the same effort, with even a fraction of sincerity, one can easily transcend all his expectations trillions and billions and unlimited numbers of times by rendering pure devotional service. Actually, everyone is being cheated. In South India, many people, they know that their happiness is much higher. I met a devotee of sorts, and he told me that I'm not interested in the happiness of this world. I know that the women in this world, they're all smelly and bad. I want to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy the apsaras. So you're crazy. But in South India, you meet people that are completely karmakanda. They know this world is terrible. So he said, although I'm thinking that if I could be born in America, that may also be all right. Because there, that is like a heavenly planet. They have funny ideas, some people. Well, you people are here born in the heavenly planets in the minds of many Indians. So, you can understand that if this is comparatively supposed to be the heavenly planet, it's still hellish. Of course, heavenly planets is something much different, but it's like that in a material world. It doesn't matter what standard one is living at when it's material, he thinks that it's miserable, comparatively. He doesn't think it's miserable necessarily, but he feels that it is not so much greater. Because, just like the ant is living 2-3 days, but in that 2-3 days he's actually living 100 years of his life. A mosquito is living maybe an hour or a day. Is living 100 years, and that they're having, the Prabhupada explained, they're having a complete life. Birth, growing, reproduction, dwindling, dying, everything is happening. Their family life, whatever they have, it's happening. A rabbit, 3 years or 1 year, whatever their span is, everything happens in that time. Their tempo is increased. So similarly, as one goes to higher planetary systems, their lifespan may be hundreds and hundreds of years, their happiness may be more, but they don't appreciate it to that extent because everything is relatively adjusted. Everything is relatively adjusted, the full benefit, but actually transcendental happiness. That doesn't have any limits. It doesn't have any. One is transcending all these material relativities and taken to the absolute platform. So as long as one is desiring heavenly planets or another birth or any kind of situation, even if he attains that, they'll never be satisfied. The person who's thinking that if I could only be born in America, I'll be happy. Because of propaganda. But actually we see the American people, they're more unhappy. Because in spite of having so many things, they're completely frustrated because they're still not satisfied. The have and the have nots. But those who have, they're frustrated, and those who don't have are frustrated. Prabhupada gave the story about the Delhi Ladu, or the Lucknow Ladu, that there's a sweet shop in Lucknow where they serve very wonderful sweet balls. And they advertise that this sweet ball is so wonderful that anyone who hasn't had it, he can understand his life is wasted. And if you haven't tasted this ladu, that means that your life, you can just take it for granted that you have not really lived. Therefore, your life is useless. 90% wasted. But if you take that sweet, even you take it, as soon as you had one, it was so good, you want another one. And you cannot rest till you get another one. So then you're feeling very frustrated by not having it. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada explained that in either case, whether you've tasted it, your life is wasted, and once you've tasted it, it's still wasted because you're still not satisfied. You can't live without getting it again. So over this sweet, if one doesn't take it, he doesn't spend any money, doesn't waste any time, doesn't go to the store. All right, so he may be feeling some anxiety that I haven't tried it. I haven't tasted it. But the person who's tasted it, he's still in anxiety, but he had to pay his money, he had to go down there, he's still frustrated. So it's better not to waste any money. So, material enjoyment is like that. We may have so many conceptions, what is happiness? But when we get that, it's not what we wanted. This way, as soon as we desire material things, we're controlled by the illusory energy. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmana sarvasa ahankara yuratma kottam iti manyate. And as soon as we desire Krishna's service, then we're under the protection of the divine nature, of Subhadra Devi. So we can choose who we want to control us. Because we're going to be controlled by material desires or by spiritual desires. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, jeev jago, gora chandra bole, koto nidra jao maya pisa chira kole. How long will you remain sleeping on the lap of the witch maya? How long do you want to be kicked, kicked, and kicked again? So why do we cling to the feet of Maya when she's only kicking us? We should simply take shelter. Ami bina bandhu kyaache tumar. Who is a friend? Who is your true friend except for me? This is Lord Chaitanya's statement. He has come here, he has given us the maushadi, the great medicine. Harinama. Because by chanting Harinama, one instantly gets a drop of the nectar of transcendental life. And if we continue to chant, one day we will experience the ocean of transcendental happiness. Even that one drop is worth more than all the material happiness in the world put together. Far, far more. Because everything in the material world is so relative, is so mixed with misery, that it never satisfies. But even one drop of Krishna's transcendental qualities, appreciation, fully satisfies the soul. Therefore we first prayer of the Shikastika. Sravana, tells us that simply by chanting and hearing an ocean of transcendental happiness, a transcendental knowledge, everything is realized. So, we should see that who we want to serve, because servant we are. Jivya Sarupoi Krishna Nitya Das. We are the eternal servant of Krishna. And everyone that we meet, they're also the servant of Krishna. But some people recognize that, and some people have forgotten it. Some people are in ignorance. We go out to distribute books, we go out to discuss with people, to remind them that they're the servant of Krishna. That they are now serving Maya, and that service is killing them. By serving Maya, one must die and one must again be born and by serving Krishna, one never, after dying, needs to be born again. So serving Krishna gives life, while serving Maya means death. So, therefore, the devotees are considered to be the most compassionate of all people. Because what they're giving, that gift has got no comparison anywhere in this universe. People are sleeping in illusion. And when a devotee wakes that person up, begins his spiritual life, that means that everything is about to change. Everything has already changed. Just like Narada Muni, he prayed that simply by taking the Mahaprasad of the Bhakti Vedantas, his ability to understand spiritual life, his attachment for spiritual life, and his taste for chanting the holy name, everything became manifest. Prabhupada describes that it works like a favorable, in a good sense, slow poison. We take chanting, we take prasadam, gradually this transforms our material desires and puts us on the transcendental platform. We become attached to Lord Krishna. When the King Viramvira Maharaja stole the books from Srinivasacharya, Srinivas was feeling such separation. He fell down. He was smashing his head. You can imagine, he was given all the books by the residents of Vrindavan. Take these books to distribute them. And on the way, they all stole it. The Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Sarasvata Naravas, Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, all the books of the Goswamis that they had spent years and years writing by hand, filled with the nectar of Lord Krishna's and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. They're all stolen. Narottam Thakur, Shyamananda Pandit, who are with him. They didn't want to show their face again to anyone. They thought, let's just jump in the Agni Kunda, in the ocean of fire, and finish it. How can you again see those Vaishnavas? They've entrusted you with these books, and everyone lost, finished. But somehow or another, Srinivasacharya got message that if he goes to the one king, Viramvira Maharaj of Vishnupur, in the forest, he may be able to find these books. So he comforted the other two and had them go back to preaching, that he would soon inform them. He was confident that only Krishna could have done such a thing, that they must find these books again. And so then finally, reaching the palace of Maharaj Viramvira, Srinivasacharya got the opportunity to give a class in the Bhagavatam. And by hearing the Bhagavatam, the Viramvira was convinced about the exalted position of Srinivas, and he surrendered at his lotus feet. Actually, the scriptures describe that by simply having those books in his palace, simply by seeing those books, his whole life was transformed. He became purified. No sooner did he see those books, they were so powerful that his heart became pure. He immediately started to feel that I have committed a great offense. These books are belonging to some great Vaishnava, and I have taken them. Because he actually arranged to have these books stolen, the same Viramvira Maharaj, by a special green braid team of armed robbers. But as soon as he saw the books, his heart was melted. So just by having the transcendental literatures, people are benefiting so much they can't even imagine. And the Karmakanda Shastras of the Bhagavat Mahatya gives so many, just by, without even reading, just by seeing Bhagavatams or by all the different wonderful reactions one can get. Then if one actually reads the Bhagavatam, if he actually understands just the smallest portion, he reaches all perfection. And actually, one thing leads to the next. So these transcendental literatures, they are so important. People come to us, they've read the books, they want to engage in service. You see, if we can engage them in chanting, if we can engage them in further service, we know that because of association with the literatures, their devotional life has been begun. And now if we can further encourage them, it's possible that in this very life, they can completely finish off all their material attachments. They can completely become attached to Lord Krishna's lotus feet. In my tour of South America, we're discussing this point, and now the devotees in different places, whenever they go on Sankirtan and they meet a favorable person, they get him to sign his name, become a friend of Krishna. In other places they call it folk, friend of, oh Lord Krishna, and different things. But there it's amigo de Krishna, Spanish, friend of Krishna. And then they have people that cultivate those people. And I know Adi Keshav Maharaj in his zone, in the northeast, he's told me that some of the people they've cultivated in that way, forming to them together in groups, have actually already turned into full-fledged temples and preaching centers over a period of 2-3 years. Just by seeing that the seeds that have already been planted, when we meet them again on Sankirtan or when they come by to the temple, that they're further cultivated, that they're further watered. Because these transcendental literatures, they're like transcendental time bombs that are working constantly. Radiation effect. So when people again come by a little more purified, then we step up the purification. Oh, now you should chant. Now you should offer your prasadam. Now you should worship. The mail order department in Los Angeles, they get so many letters from people. Oh, I have read your book. It is wonderful. And they write back, and many people are worshiping deities in their home. Maybe right here in Chicago. They don't even reveal the names of all the people that they're writing to. No one asks half the time. But so many people, just by getting the books, their lives are transformed. In Los Angeles, there were hundreds of people that attended the Rath Yatra with bead bags that no one ever saw before, didn't know who they were, didn't know where they came from. Where they got the beads. So people buy beads and they chant. And automatically a person becomes attached to Krishna. So Rupa Goswami says, yena tena prakarena, that by any means if one gets one attracted to Krishna, you see, then when one is attracted, then you can introduce more and more rules and regulations to avoid all the offenses, to quickly wind up all the impediments of pure devotional service. So Srinivasacharya, of course, he was the great liberated soul. And you can imagine the joy when finally he regained those transcendental literatures. And not only did he regain the literatures, but he also initiated that king, Birambir Maharaj, into a Vaishnava cult, into Vaishnava Sampradaya, disciplic succession. His wife, the queen, begged for initiation. She got initiation. She also begged if she could go and see Narottam Thakur. She had heard so much about him. And the king personally helped to publish those books by hand and distribute. So, everything happens simply by trying to carry out the instruction of the higher authorities. There may be setbacks, there may be difficulties. We have to avoid all offenses against Vaishnavas. When we offend a Vaishnava, Krishna, he can tolerate some offense. He can forgive someone for offending him. But he can't forgive someone who offends a Vaishnava. Durvasa Muni offended Lord Ambarish. He went all the way to Vishnaloki. He said, "No, I'm sorry, I can't help you. You have to go back to my devotee and request his forgiveness." Alright. If my devotee forgives you, then your slate is clean. But I cannot forgive you. You have offended my devotee. And again, Devas had to go all the way back. Fell down on Maharaj Ambarish's feet. He said, "Even the most fallen dog eaters, the untouchables, those people, they're chanting the name of Hari, how their lives are transformed. What to speak of someone who is constantly worshiping?" He was realizing what is the potency of someone who is rendering devotional service. Maharaj Ambarish appeared to be, you know, a king. He was doing his worship every day. He was washing the temple floor. He didn't look like a great powerful yogi. He came in there with his power and said, "Sick him," and sent his demon after Maharaj Ambarish. The whole demon was destroyed by Sudarshan Chakra, and he was being chased all over the universe by Sudarshan Chakra. Because devotees don't put on, they don't even know their own power. Because they're protected by divine energy. So Prabhupada said, we should be very careful not to offend other Vaishnavas. Even a little, big, medium, is very hard to see, you see, relatively. Where are Vaishnavas situated? Someone who is serving the spiritual master, who is serving Krishna, he's a Vaishnava. And to offend a Vaishnava is very bad. It should be completely avoided. Great soul sees good qualities. Even where it seems the maximum only bad qualities, he sees it. Oh, here's a good quality. Remember in Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada commented that the spiritual master, of course, he says his duty is to find the faults in the disciple and rectify them. But he never rejects a disciple who wants to serve. The spiritual master always sees the service rendered by the disciple. So even a disciple makes countless mistakes. If that service desire is still there, he adjusts. But when there's no service desire, of course, then only the relationship can be cut. Only if one blasphemes the spiritual master, loses faith in the spiritual master, then he's finished. That soul is highly unfortunate. So we should avoid all kind of offense against Vaishnavas. Let's see. It's very painful to Krishna, very painful to the other Vaishnavas, and very harmful to our spiritual life. If someone who wants to find faults, he can always find faults. They found faults in the moon. Oh, the moon has got a pocked face. They find faults in Krishna. And if someone wants to find good qualities, in a devotee, you will find many good qualities. Even if there's a bad quality, By Krishna's mercy, bad qualities are destroyed. So now is a very difficult time because our spiritual master and founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has transferred his pastimes to some other place in its visible form, but his pastimes are still going on and his movement is still spreading. And so we have to all work cooperatively together that his desires are actually achieved. He said that only half my work is finished. You must finish the other half. But in the 12 years time, the quantity of achievement is inconceivable. If we could all even just maintain what the standard, the level of intensity that he had achieved, which we have not been able to do. Three years ago, book distribution in America was much greater than it is now. Different preaching. Of course, in other areas, it's expanding. But this can only happen if everyone cooperates together, if everyone surrenders. Taking Lord Chaitanya's idea as the prime idea, and when Maya's idea is coming up, casting that aside. This choice is always before us. Maya's idea and Krishna's idea. And if we are too much in association with materialistic people, we will choose Maya's idea. We will neglect the order of our spiritual master. Even Maya dresses the idea up to appear Krishna conscious. Sometimes. But it goes against the order of our spiritual master, so actually it is not the proper thing. So we have to stick very rigidly to the Guru Sadhu Shastra, the scriptures, the spiritual master and the sadhu, the great devotees' instructions, and guide our lives by them. We keep the link strong with the Divine Transcendental Lord by this surrendering process. People in the whole world are suffering so much, they have no idea what they're working for, where they're heading. And we wonder how we can give them, how we can change the course of the world. All it takes is just one slight glimpse where they're at, how they're actually aimlessly going, and what the slightest glimpse, slightest association, what is the aim? And immediately everything is changed. It's just like a person running down the street. He said, "Listen, where are you going?" "So I'm going to catch the bus." "The bus is the other way." "Oh." Completely turns around. If they could, it doesn't take, you know, like a whole, you know, band and it gets the idea that, oh, I'm going the wrong way. It turns around and starts running the other way. All we have to do is just give the people the glimpse. "Hey, where are you going? That's not the right way. It's this way." They go back to Godhead. Doesn't take a lot. It just takes a little bit. Just if you catch their ear. Just put a little doubt in their mind even. "Hey, I don't think you're going the right way." Then they think about it and then, "Well, what is the right way?" "Well, this is the right way." "Oh." Persons, this probably used example. You go in the restaurant. In Bangladesh, one man was going to the restaurant. That was the best restaurant in town. Very sweet meat. Picked up his soup, and in the soup, he found a finger, a human finger. He said, "My God." Put it in his handkerchief and went and showed it to the police after vomiting outside. And then
nice Mohammedan shop. The police surrounded the shop and then raided it. Dug in the back, there were hundreds of cadavers and corpses and bones and things, skulls. This is a famous shop for first quality meat. But they had been, to save their cost, they had been kidnapping people from the street because they weigh have about 10, 15 kilos of meat on it. Each kilo there costs $1 a kilo. So you get $10 for a body. You can imagine, you know, adds up. Hundreds of bodies make a few hundred dollars. That's the value of the human life to them. So, you know, it doesn't take much if a person just realizes that his material happiness that he's enjoying, he's eating himself. He's actually eating himself. He's tasting his own blood. If you can just understand that immediately, a person, he's not going to eat in that place. He's not a cannibal. So first of all, people, we just have to catch their ear. They have to listen to what we're saying. And if they just hear a little bit, everything changes. Just a little prasadam, just a little association with the transcendental literature. Everything changes. They get unmoored from the course that they're on. And gradually they come around, or quickly, depending on their fortune. So Mother Earth, she's of course a great pure devotee, and she is completely absorbed in transcendental anxiety, so the personality of religiosity is asking her, why you are suffering? Maybe now he's hit it on the head. Are you suffering because of separation of Lord Krishna? A devotee's suffering is not suffering. It's transcendental bliss. Because a devotee's suffering means he's feeling separation of Krishna. He has no material suffering in that sense. So, in future verses we will find out more. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? This is more of a common sense question. It's like Rupa Goswami, atyaharascha. That you don't want to overeat. Yeah, so, where is the standard of how much one should eat? The scripture doesn't say that one should eat 1.274 pounds per man, you know, or 27% of the body weight, you know, for lunch and 15% for breakfast. It doesn't give any. It says one shouldn't eat more, one shouldn't eat less. And Srila Prabhupada said that the actual thing is that as much as one can work, he should eat. If you eat a lot, then you should work more. You see, if you eat as much as, if you work as much as you're eating, then there's no difficulty. If you have a better tape recorder, but you're actually using it to record Krishna's discourses, and that is being reproduced and utilized, then it's worth it. And if you just have an expensive tape recorder, but it's not really utilized, then it's over endeavor. Or if the whole thing is depending on the total time, place, and circumstance in every respect. It's not that there's a cut and dry. What's a good tape recorder for Chicago? In South America, they would consider to be extreme luxury, inconceivable, ridiculous kind of thing, maybe. Because there, the economy is much less advanced. And in India, a person will bloop over that tape recorder if he's a weak devotee just to get it. Because it's so luxurious. So in different places, there's different situations. Therefore, one has to have a spiritual master, one has to have senior sadhus or Vaishnavas, that if one has Tao, he confirms that is this necessary? I'm thinking that this is necessary for my service. Then the spiritual master or the sadhus, they say, yes, it's so reasonable. And if we get very fixed that I want to be independent, I'll just make my own standard. Then we're responsible. If we do too much, if we're wasteful, Krishna will hold us responsible. But if we take the advice of senior Vaishnavas, then we're not responsible. You see, we are following the higher authorities, we're following the Vaishnava. So why should we take an unnecessary risk? Therefore, we always consult with Vaishnavas on anything where there's any doubt. Even there may not be any doubt, but in our mind so much, but we may also consult just to be sure, just to show the proper procedure. And if we're very rigid to do everything independently, then we're responsible. And if we misuse the funds that Krishna gives us, if we overeat, overaccumulate, then Krishna will hold us responsible. And Prabhupada said, why should we take unnecessary risk? What is the need? If everybody in the temple has, you know, what does it cost? A $2,000 nakamishi? Then the temple probably would not be able to offer any flowers to Krishna. But maybe one temple needs one good recorder. And then everyone else makes copies. So, I mean, that's why there's temple presidents and why there's regional secretaries and GBCs and senior devotees. To try to create a balance. But it's a common sense question. One shouldn't take more than necessary. And if Krishna has provided, there's no offense in taking what is necessary. Whatever one takes material facility, if that facility is used for Krishna, then it elevates one. But if it's not used for Krishna, then it becomes a burden. So there's no harm in having material facilities, except that if one is not able to use all those facilities, then it simply becomes a burden. Becomes an impediment. Everything we take material, we should engage it. That's why for Brahmachari, Prabhupada said, his life is very perfect. He doesn't have to worry about so many things. He has his cloth, he has his place of where to, his sleeping gear and where he wants to sleep, and he has his service. Mind is clear. No difficulty. And now you want to add into that, all right, a tape recorder and a watch. Those shouldn't be too overriding burden. Of course, when one enters married life, he's got so many things to worry about. You see, but if everything is kept Krishna conscious, then he can overcome all these things. The Brahmachari life is very free life. So the system is that whatever you have, that should be engaged. So it's easy if you don't have so many things to engage. That makes it simple. And if you have more things, then you have to engage those, otherwise you become entangled. Any other questions?
Because I find myself thinking, you know, in the same way.
Of course, the goal of Krishna consciousness is to develop our friendship with Krishna and the spiritual master. One needs the association of Vaishnavas. Because we're born in a material world, our tendency is to always see the faults in others and to always see the difficulties in a situation. But actually the difficulties in situations, Prabhupada said that failure is a stepping stone to success. That there's a verse in the Vedas. It says, chandan chandan punarapi chandam, chandanam chandava, kancham kancham punarapi puni, kanchanam kanchavarnam, that the more that one burns the gold, the more lustrous it becomes. The more that one rubs the sandalwood, the more the scent comes out, and the more one beats the sugar cane, the more that the sweet juice comes out. So all these, you know, grinding and beating and burning, these are all like violent activities. I mean, they're very violent activities. Yet, when applied to sandalwood, sugarcane, and gold, they actually produce something wonderful. You see, so in material life, we're always looking for something very free from all type of disturbances. But actually in Krishna consciousness, obstacles can produce a refinement of our devotional service if we actually learn to depend on Krishna.